Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Chet Amar Aleph, the new perek, Cheskat HaBatim. Before we start, we just more generally want to speak about the word Chazaka, because in Shas, the word Chazaka appears in two forms. There is a Chazaka, which we bumped into before, which is a mechanism for Kinyan. It's a mechanism for acquisition. As we saw in the Mishnayot in Kiddushin, Karka, land, can be acquired through Kesef, Shtar, V'Chazaka. Over there, Chazaka is a mechanism of Kinyan. It's a means by which to acquire things. On the other hand, the chazaka that's being spoken about here in this parak is known as a cheskat raya. It is a proof of ownership. For that reason, the Ritva over here in the beginning of the parak says that we're actually talking about two different terms completely. One should not conflate the terms. There's a chazaka that functions as a kinyan, and there's also a chazaka, which is what's being directed here in our parak, which refers to the proof or evidence of the fact that you are the owner of such an item. And so therefore, he sees these being as completely separate. Others suggest that the chazaka are different in the way that they function, but in the end, they're of the same nature, which is that they are establishing your ownership over something. One of them works. Chazaka, which is der kinyan, works for you, establish your ownership, because now you have a mechanism that allows you to acquire the item. On the other hand, chazaka over here works as a proof to the fact that this is your balut, this is your ownership. So whether you explain like the Ritva that they're separate terms, or like others that they're a singular term, we have to note that distinction between chazaka working as the means by which you acquire something, versus the chazaka that is mentioned in this parak, which is simply a proof to the fact that you have ownership. That has implications, which we'll see on the second half of today's daf, and we've mentioned numerous times in the Masechta already, which is chazaka by itself is not proof of ownership. Over here, chazaka is only a way to establish that once you have another reason to have ownership over here, that guarantees or shows that it is your ownership. And that comes from over here, a difference between karka, real property, and metaltalim, non-real property or movable items. We know the expression possession is 9/10 of the law, and that is true, because we have a principle in halacha that we paskin like, the chachamim believe, hamotzi mechavero alav araya. Whoever wants to change the status quo, the burden of proof is upon him. So the question is, how do we establish the status quo? So by metaltalim, by movable objects, then possession of is evidence of the ownership of the item, and that is yours. If we find an item in your house, then anybody who wants to take it away from you or out of your house has a burden of proof. Now you have to say to us why you have it or how it came into your possession, but assuming that you have a reason that was in your possession, then if we want to remove it from your possession, we need to bring proof. There's a burden of proof on those that want to change that status quo. But their possession is easy to establish because the movable object, when it's in your possession, meaning literally on your person or in your property, in your house, then we know that you've established ownership over it or a chazaka over it. And anybody who wants to change that status quo has got to bring evidence to the contrary. So that's true with inanimate objects, because the only way the object could move and come into your possession is if you took it there, or the Balim gave it to you, or you stole it, but we have to establish somehow that it reached you, and in reaching you, it's now in your possession because the object doesn't move by itself. So for instance, for animals, which we're not going to speak about today, but later on in the Masechta, there you can't establish ownership just because they're in your possession. Animals move by themselves, and therefore it's not clear, just because an animal's in your yard, that it's yours, because it could have gotten there on its own. Now, with regards to property, we have almost the exact opposite problem, which is, yes, property is an inanimate object, but it's an inanimate object that doesn't move. And therefore, in order to establish ownership over property, it's very hard to say it's in my possession, not in his possession. You can't lift up the property and move it to your place. You can't lift up the property and hold it. And therefore, how do we establish ownership over property through the mechanism of chazaka, through the mechanism of showing or demonstrating ownership over the property? So that's what the perek is speaking about here. That is the chazaka that we are discussing. And now, if someone has owned a property, and people know they own the property, and now you've purchased that property from the individual. Just because you've purchased the property from the individual, there's nothing that demonstrates that there's been a change in ownership over here. And in people's minds, it still belongs to the original owner. And then sometimes that happens today as well. For instance, if you purchase a home that was owned by someone beforehand that people in the community know, they'll still refer to the house as so-and-so's house, the previous owner's house. Until you are there for a sufficient amount of time that either people forget about the original owner or that you establish yourself as well, the house name will quote unquote remain with the other party, even though you're the purchaser of the house. And that is the same is true with karka, especially in a world or a situation where there is no repository of titles where one can register the transfer of ownership. If you could do that, then it would be easy to establish who owns the property. You go look at the title. That's why we do title searches and figure out who is the owner of the property. But if there is no repository like that, like in the day of the Gemara, then how do we establish that the person has ownership or is the new owner of the property? The mechanism for that is chazakah. And chazakah, as we're going to see in the Mishnah, is utilizing the property in a way that an owner would utilize the property. If you demonstrate ownership by acting like an owner on the property, then we assume that you have taken possession of the property. Once again, it only is true if you have a claim as to how the property came into your possession. Just because you used it for a certain period of time and had that utility does not make you the owner of the property. You are the owner of the property because you say, I purchased it, I was given it as a gift, and then you now establish or create a new name to the ownership by utilizing it. So chazakah, again, as we mentioned before, is a ra'ayah. It's a proof to the fact that there must have been a change in ownership. And what the chazkat ra'ayah allows you to do is not to bring any additional evidence to your claim. Normally, if you say, I purchased the property, we would demand from you that you show up with the document of sale. But after a certain period of time, again, when you don't have a repository, and in a time period where it's hard to store objects that they don't go bad or rot, so we establish your ownership through continuous usage of the property without anybody objecting to that utility or that usage with a claim that I purchased it, I received it as a gift. And that's how you establish ownership over here. And that's what our Mishnah is about to discuss is, how do we do that? How do you create or establish a ownership through utility? What is the duration of time or the framework in which this happens? That's what the Mishnah says. Chazkat ha-batim v'ha-borot v'ashichim v'ha-me'arot. To establish a chazak on a house, on the borot, shichim, and me'arot, which are different types of cisterns or water storage areas, v'ashochavot, which are the birdhouses or the dovecotes, v'amerchatzaot, or bathhouses, u'beit ha-badim, olive presses, u'beit ha-shilachim, or fields in which there is continuous need to water the fields, whether it's watered through a natural spring that is on the field, or whether there are water channels or water pools that are there that are used to water the field, va'avadim, and eved kenani, slaves, who have a din of karka, who have a din of property in halacha, like we saw in the Mishnayot and Kiddushin, v'chom shu'oseh perot tadir, anything that has constant utility, meaning that people use this on a regular basis, chezkatan, the way to establish proof of ownership, is shlosh shanim miyom liyom. It's 3 years from day to day. It's that you have to have a complete 3 years of using it like an owner in order to establish ownership over that. Since it's used on a regular basis, so almost every day, if you just use it once or twice during a period of time, that's not really an establishment of ownership because someone could have lent that to you to use it that way. You could have asked permission. You could have rented it for a couple of days. If you continuously use it over the 3 year period, that is a strong piece of evidence that this belongs to you or that you have somehow established ownership over here. Now, obviously, we don't expect you to use it daily, meaning every single day, a bathhouse. When they went to it once a week, we would expect you to use it on a regular basis every week, every other week. We expect you to use it on a recurring basis over this period of time, not necessarily daily, in order to establish ownership. Now, as far as that is concerned, you have questions that are raised by the Rishonim. Tosafot raises the question about the Beit HaBadim. We're talking about an olive press. An olive press is something that's used annually when they press the olives. So how come over here we're saying that a Beit HaBad is something that's used on a continuous basis? So Bali and Tosafot claim that the majority of people use a Beit HaBad, an olive press, once a year. But there are people who slowly press their olives over the year. They don't press them all in one shot, but they press them slowly over the year. And that's what we're referring to here with regards to the Beit HaBad. Other Rishonim, like the Ramban, believe that we're talking about Beit HaBad in a more general sense, not just an olive press, but a press. And therefore, it goes through the different seasons with different fruits or different items that you would press inside of it. And therefore, it's more generic as a press than rather Beit HaBad, which is normally known as an olive press. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here suggests that the Beit HaBad is used to press once a year, but then they store the oil in the Beit HaBad itself. They leave it there, and then they go and take slowly from the Beit Abad over the year, they start to utilize it or take it from there. So in that way, you can establish ownership, even though, again, it seemingly is only used once a year. Here, we're suggesting that there are other reasons as to why this Beit Abad might be functioning or active through the year. And therefore, the mechanism or the means by which to establish ownership is to utilize it over that period of time for 3 years on a regular basis. Now the Mishnah moves on to a new section or a new enumeration of items, which is steabao. Steabao is a field that is watered by rain. It's interesting that the terminology bao is used to describe that because that was the Canaanite rain god, and therefore it became a borrowed term that is used to explain or to describe a field that suffices with rain. Steabao is a field that you do not need to water on a regular basis because the rain that comes is sufficient. But the other aspect of that is that you're not manually irrigating the field, then the field is only going to produce once a year or only going to produce during the rainy season it's going to allow it to grow. When you're irrigating or artificially irrigating the field, then you can establish more cycles of planting over the year versus a steabao that is just basically an annual crop that is brought out there. Therefore, chezkata shloshanim ve'ena miyom liyom. Over there, you can establish ownership by using it 3 years, but not day to day. It's not 3 years of total time period, but it's 3 years or three cycles in a sense, which is you have to harvest from it, or you have to use crops from it 3 different times. And now, the way Rashi describes the Mishnah, we are coming to explain what that means. And that is, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosha Chodashim Barishona, you need 3 months at the end of the first year, Shlosha Ba'achrona, 3 months at the beginning of the third year, Ushnim Asar Chodesh Bemtza, and 12 months in the middle. So according to Rabbi Ishmael, this type of field will require 18 months to establish ownership over it, because you can capture 3 months from the end of the first year, 3 months in the beginning of the third year, and 12 months in the middle. And that'll give you 18 months, because in that period of time, you could go through 3 cycles of produce that would establish your ownership. And therefore, he says, Hare Shmona Asar Chodesh, that you can establish such a chazaka through 18 months. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Chodesh Barishona, V'Chodesh Ba'achrona, you need only a month at the end of the first year, a month at the beginning of the third year, and 12 months in the middle, that you can establish ownership through a 14-month period of time where you've then been engaged in 3 years, but you only need 14 months to be engaged in those 3 years. Again, here, the reason you don't need the full 3 years is because these aren't items that are used constantly. They have cycles to them. So if you're able to access the cycle in 3 different years, then we're going to establish your ownership through that period of 3. Now, over here, the Balei HaTosafot, although there are a slew of Rishonim who do not learn like Rashi, but rather suggest that there are actually 3 opinions here in the Mishnah, and it's not like we just suggested that it is a colon that comes after Cheskata Shloshanim Venim Yom Liyom colon. What does that mean? Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva argue about it. But rather, there are 3 positions here. There's a position of the Chachamim and the Tanakhama who believes you need 3 years, but 3 years not of constant usage like you would in the Reisha, but 3 years of engaging with this field in the regular cycles that it has. But that Tanakhama would require the full 3 years. And then you have Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva arguing whether it's really 3 years, 18 months, or 14 months. So there are 2 ways to read the Mishnah as to whether it is 3 opinions or only 2 opinions. In addition, trying to establish why the 18-month period is actually a way or a mechanism to establish ownership is somewhat difficult to understand, and the Balei HaTosafot over here spends some time trying to dissect what it is that you are doing that is establishing that ownership, which derives from partly the language that the Mishnah uses, which is, if you tell me 3 months, 3 months, and 12 months, that is 18 months, why does the Mishnah have to do that calculation to add it up and say, Harei Shmona Asar Chodesh? The Balei HaTosafot point out, many places in Shas, the Gemara asks the question whether the Mishnah is coming to teach us how to do math, how to give us a total number. We would have known that without the Mishnah. So what is the Mishnah adding when it gives you the sum total of months that are mentioned by Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael? The Ramban over here suggests that the Mishnah is trying to do something that we're going to see one of the Amoraim do later on, which is to suggest that the months must be consecutive, sequential months. It can't be that you establish through 18 months of disjointed usage, but rather it's got to be 18 months straight of time period in which you are engaged with the field. And that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. I'm saying that it's got to be 18 months. It means 18 months straight. On the other hand, there are others one who take it the other way around, which is a chumrah, which is that even if you're able to eat three crops in less time than 18 months, the Mishnah is establishing that 18 months is the minimum amount of time that you need to be in there. Even if you're able to use or cycle through crops faster, still, if these are stay abal, and these are things that usually happen on an annual basis, then we require a minimum of 18 months, according to Rabbi Shmuel, and 14 months, according to Rabbi Akiva. Others suggest that the total number here of 18 months is coming to tell you that the 18 months do not have to be compromised of 3 months in the beginning, 3 months at the end, and 12 months in the middle, but it can be any type of stretch of 18-month period in which you have at least something from 1 year, something from the last year, and then 12 months in the middle to establish ownership as long as you go through 3 cycles during that period of time. And Rashi says the machloki between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel revolves around the size of crop that you need. That Rabbi Shmuel requires a larger size crop in order to establish a chazaka, and that's why he requires 18 months. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva requires even just simple vegetables or smaller crops, and therefore only requires 14 months to establish a chazaka. And the Balei Tosafot also suggests that it may be that you do not have to engage in the field in the same manner over those periods of time. It might be enough that you harvest the field in that first year, you do the whole cycle in the second year, and then you do the planting till close to the point of harvest in the third year, that you could establish that ownership, even though you may not have to go through the entire cycle of the year. It might be enough that you do what would be the large part or a significant part of the cycle in any given year, and then through that you can establish a chazaka. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Amar Rav Yishmael, Bamed Dvarim Amurim. When is this true? The Stei Lavan. We were talking about a field of grains. Field of grains is known as a Stei Lavan because at the end of the maturation of the grains, they sit out in the fields and dry out, and then the fields look very white. But that's true when you're talking about fields of grains. About B'Stei Ilan, when you're talking about a field that is comprised of trees, Kanas Etvuato, if he brings in the harvest, as Rashi notes over here, this is referring to a vineyard, and it's talking about the collection of grapes. Tosafot brings a pasuk from Sefer Dvarim that calls the vineyard Tvuata Karem. So the word Tvua is used in that context. And therefore, he believes that we're speaking about the harvest of grapes. Umasaket Zetav. And he then harvested the olives, kanasid ketso, and then he harvested the figs, harelu shloshanim. Or in essence, what the Mishnah is saying over here with regards to stei ilan, since a field or an orchard or a vineyard has different fruits that cycle at different times of the year, you're able to establish 3 harvests without going through 3 years. You simply need 3 different harvests, and that will be the equivalent of establishing a cycle of 3. So in this case, the example is that the field produces grapes, olives, and figs, and therefore the harvesting of each one of these separate crops gives you the equivalent of a 3-year period. Now, Balei HaTosafot are bothered by the order of the items here because it doesn't seem to be a chronological order. If you were going in chronological order, the figs are picked first, then you have the grapes, and then the olives. The way it's laid out in our Mishnah, it is the grapes, olives, and then figs. Some say that it has to do with the importance of the crop, not necessarily that it is in the order of the way that they're harvested through the year, but rather that grapes are the most important, then olives, then figs. The Balei HaTosafot make a suggestion that it has to do with when you bring these items in. So even though the figs are picked first, they are left out in the field to dry over a long period of time. And therefore, it ends up that they're brought into the house after the grape and olive harvest, even though they were picked at an earlier time. The Rabbeinu Hanano suggests that it has to do with not the order of the harvest seasons, but rather starting from the month of Tishrei. You start from Tishrei through the agricultural or the year of seasons, then this would be the order, because starting at Tishrei, you would have the grape harvest first, then the olive harvest, and then only after that, the figs harvest. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shemati Mehochei Usha. Rabbi Yochanan says, I heard from those that went to Usha, which is a term referring to the Sanhedrin after it moved from Yavne up to Usha, which is in the Galil, Shayu Omrim, that they used to say about this Mishnah, Minayin L'chazoka She'e Gimel Shanim. How do we know that a chazoka requires 3 years? Mishor HaMuad. We learned that out from the Parshia of Shor Muad, something that we already spent time on in Baba Kama, how a Shor changes from a Shor Tam to a Shor Muad. Mashor Muad. Baik Ashor Mu'ad, Kevin Shnagach, Gimel Nigichot, after it gores 3 times, Nafik Le Mechezkat Tam, Bekam Le Mechezkat Mu'ad, It moves from being, or the status of being a tam to being a status of a muad. Hachanami. So too in our case over here. Given the achla tlatshnin, since it ate it for 3 years, nopakla mirshut mocher, it leaves the possession of the seller, v'kaimala b'shut lokeach, and then it exists in the possession of the buyer. So now the Gemara is creating an equation. Equation that is not necessarily an equation of equivalence, because obviously the cases are different. But what it's saying is that Shur Mu'ad establishes a paradigm by which three, or the number three, is going to establish a change in status. So just like by Shur Mu'ad, the three times that it gores changes its status from Mu'ad to Tam, so too over here, 3 years, which is the unit of time which we're looking at with regards to land, that's considered to be the base unit of time is 1 year. Therefore, if you have 3 years, it's going to enable the change in ownership from the seller to the buyer. The Baal HaYetos Tosafot already perplexed a little bit by the comparison because the nature of it is different. Over there, by the case of the Shur Mu'ad, you're trying to establish the fact that it is a Shur Mu'ad. And each activity that it undergoes or undertakes actually brings it closer to the position of being a Shur Mu'ad. Each goring is part and parcel of the Chazakah. On the other hand, by the case of the land, it's not actually the fact that you have access and utilize the land that establishes the chazakah, but it's actually the lack of macha'ah, the lack of objection from the other party that establishes the chazakah. So in this case, what's really happening is that every year that you're there without some sort of objection, that now serves to undermine the existing chazakah. So actually it's working in the opposite direction, whereas by Shur Mu'ad it's working to establish the chazakah. And number two is each activity or each item is a part and parcel of building towards that change in status. Over here, it's the other way around. First of all, you're trying to undermine the chazakah that exists. And number two, it's not your activity that's doing it. It's the lack of objection by the other party that actually establishes it. And for that reason, Tosafot over here formulates the comparison in the following manner. And he says, just like over there by Shur Mu'ad, when it gores 3 times, nofak le michatzi nezek le nezek shalem, it changes the status from half nezek to full nezek. Hachanami, so too over here, kevin she'achla shloshanim, since he ate it here for 3 years, velo micha, and he did not object, nafak le mishut mocher le mishut lokeach, it leaves the possession of the seller and moves into the possession of the buyer. Afagav de miltud velo taimahi, even though it is a comparison or a situation that lacks any logical connection between the two cases. So Baal HaYetos Tosafot say, because of what we noted about the nuances between them, that yes, in a broad sense, that there is a comparison between the two items, but if you look at the details, they're really not a comparable cases, and therefore, what is being said here is a milta below taima. It is a logic or an explanation that doesn't really follow through if you think about it deeply, but just from a superficial perspective, 3 and 3 establish a change in status. On the other hand, the Baal HaYetos Tosafot speculate with a little with this on the next Amud, but the Ramban really takes up this position, who says that he thinks that the connection is much deeper than that, and that this was the logic of the people of Holchei Usha, that just like the shore leaves the status of Tam and moves to the status of Mu'ad by the fact that it gores, so too the ownership of the field leaves the first owners and is undermined with the 3 years of eating by the person establishing himself on the field, and therefore it moves from the original owners to the new owners. In doing so, the Ramban overcomes the problem raised by the Baal HaYetos Tosafot and creates a much deeper connection between the items, which we'll see in the upcoming part of the Gemara is easier then to explain. But he basically says that a shore does have a chazakah. It has a chazakah as a tam, as a domesticated, kind, gentle animal, and it's trying to undo that and then change it to a Shur Mu'ad. That change in status is caused by the 3 gorings that happen. And similar over here, we're trying to change the status of ownership from the present owner to the new owner, and the 3 years of eating are what allow that transition to happen. And therefore, the Ramban sees a much deeper connection between what the people of Usha said was true of a Shur Mu'ad to what is true here by the Cheskat Gimel Shanim. Gemara says, well, if that's the case, imar shmuad, in the negicha revi'it lo michayev, just like by a shor muad, you're not chayav on the 3rd time, you're only chayav once you reach the 4th time. Hachanami ad shana revi'it. Lokan revi'shutei. So too over here, until the fourth year, it will not be in his possession. As Rashi suggests over here, that just like by the case of Shor Moad, it takes three to establish the change, but then only on the fourth time is the change significant. So too over here, we would suggest change in ownership would only come, as Rashi says, after the fourth year. So as Rashi says over here, just like Lo Mechayev L'Shalem El Chatzi Nezek, you're still in the category of Chatzi Nezek until the fourth goring. So too over here, the balut, or the change in balut, should only happen at the end of the fourth year. Whereas for the Ramban, he would explain it simply. Just like by the Shor Mu'ad, the change in status is only relevant once you've gone three times. Yes, you've changed from Atam to Mu'ad, but its relevance is only significant once you have a fourth goring. So too over here. After 3 years, we would establish the fact that the original owner has lost control over here, and the new owner has gained some form of a control. But to establish absolute control, or to become the sole owner of the property, you would have to complete 4 years. And that would mean, according to the Ramban, and between the end of the third year and the end of the fourth year, actually the property would be safek. It would be in this limbo state, where the original owner no longer has a chazaka, but the new owner has yet to establish a chazaka. Similar to what happens to a shor. A shor tam moves to a shor muad after the third goring, but has no relevance until you hit the fourth time. And we would say something similar over here. So Gemara says, if you're going to use that paradigm, that would result in this outcome. Gemara says, hachi ashto. How can you compare the cases? Over there, once he gores three times, the animal is established as a muad. V'idach kilo nagach ma'lishalim. The fact that he is a mu'ad has no relevance halachically because he hasn't done anything that would precipitate a problem. It's only the reason he's chayav by the fourth time is not because you need four times, just that there's nothing to pay until he does damage. So the fourth time is the damage that he is compensating for or making amends for. But until that time, the fact that it is a shor mu'ad in and of itself doesn't change anything. Hacha came into achla tlat shnei kaima la bishutei. Over here, once you've eaten the 3 years, it's in your possession. Being in your possession is all that matters over here. We're not looking for compensation. We're not looking for damages afterward. We want to know whose possession it is in. Just like the current Ramban, the shor tam changes into a shor muad at the end of the third time. Okay, that's what the relevance of being a shor muad is. Over here, changing from Baal Rishon to Baal Sheni happens at the end of 3 years. And that has relevance right away because ownership is what we're after over here. The change in status is what we're after here, not about the compensation if something happens. And therefore, they see the parallel as being okay. It says, based on this comparison you're suggesting over here to a shor muad, it seems like the 3 years or the cycle of three can establish a change in status or ownership irrespective of what your claim is. We've already established a number of times, and I mentioned it again at the beginning of this year, that the 3 years of a chazaka are not relevant, LAMK, you have some sort of claim that can establish your ownership over here. What the Gemara is suggesting now is that by a shor tam to a shor mu'ad, they don't need any claim. It's a change in status that happens because of events that take place. So once you've made that comparison, say the same thing over here, which is that the mere fact that you have this 3 year period that creates or establishes this change in status, that should be enough to change the underlying ownership here, and there should have to be no other claim that is associated with it. Now, Tosfot is bothered by the underlying assumption in the question, which is, how could you establish ownership without any claim to has how it came into your possession? And therefore, Tosfot plays around with the different cases or possibilities as to how there is a claim over here, or claim of change in ownership, that doesn't involve the Ta'ana, a direct claim that says that I purchased it or I received it as a gift. And Baal Tosafot suggests either that the 3 years that has no objection to it establishes a chazaka by which we assume that the person will not come to make an objection, and therefore there's an implicit mechila that exists here, and that will generate the claim that we need in order to establish his ownership over here, or the possibility that he claims that somehow he purchased it from someone who purchased it from the original owner, but he has no evidence of the fact of the original sale. It wasn't there by the original sale. Just that amorphous claim would suffice in order to have him establish ownership even without a proper ta'ana. That's how Tosfot says you can establish a ta'ana here without really having a ta'ana.
Don't we have a Mishnah that says, Kol chazaka sheni ma ta'ana, eno chazaka? Any chazaka that is established without any proper claim to the ownership over here, it doesn't work. So obviously that is not the case. And given that, we can't draw this parallel anymore because the parallel seems to indicate that there's no necessity for a ta'ana. The Gemara answers, Taimamai. What is the reason that we require a ta'ana? Is damrinan, dilma k'da'amar hashto. Because maybe the truth is that the status has changed. The original owner is making a claim that he still owns it. And then we have this period of time in which the person's been on the property. But we don't know if something happened. We need this individual to tell us that the status has changed. Otherwise, the original owner who makes a claim, there's no reason not to believe him over here. So the chazaka in and of itself is not sufficient grounds to create a change in ownership, because chazaka is just a raya. It's just a proof of ownership. It is not the mechanism for change in ownership. Given that, you need to establish the facts on the ground. That ihu lo ta'in, if the person who is on the property now doesn't make any claim, anan litonle, we should make a claim on his behalf. Why should we intercede? If the original owner is saying it's his, the new owner is not saying anything, just saying I've been there, then the status quo should remain intact. The only reason for us to say that the chazaka is a change in ownership is because the individual there now says there was something that happened that changed, and we now have to look at the new circumstances. Once we look at those new circumstances together with the chazaka, that establishes a change in ownership. But in and of itself, it does not establish a change in ownership. And therefore, over here, the comparison to Shomuad is still intact. It's not that the change in status doesn't happen. It's just that there's no reason to say there's a change in status unless we have something that tells us there should be a change in status. And so we need, over here, information to tell us that now it's different than what it was before. Once you've established that, then the chazaka can go to work. By a short time in a Shomuad, mere engagement in the goring establishes or makes a change in the status of the animal. In those cases, we also need a dim to testify to the fact and to warn the ba'alim about the fact that there has been a change in the status of the animal. So similarly over there, it's a way or a mechanism for us to understand that something has changed. So there are two parts to this. There's evidence of the fact that there's change, as well as the fact that there is change. So in our case, the change happens because you tell us there was a transaction. The evidence of the change is the chazaka. By the shor tam to the shor mu'ad, the goring is the evidence of the fact that there was a change in the animal, but we have to then bring him to Beit Din, or we have to tell the ba'alim that something has changed so they are aware of the fact of that change. And so that's the information that makes it relevant, the fact that he is goring. And that actually leads to a question that's brought up by the Rosh Mishnah and the Balei Tosafot over here, which is that the Gemara in Bava Kamma argues as to whether there is Yudei Gavra or Yudei Torah, whether the way that a shor becomes muad is because the animal itself is brought to trial, or is it because the ba'alim have been warned sufficient times. And he says from our Gemara over here, it would be pretty clear that it has to be Yudei Torah. The fact that the Gemara says it's three times, the fourth time you're chayav, that would mean that on the fourth time you're already chayav, and there that would be Yudei Torah, not Yudei Gavra. Balei Tosafot give two possible answers. One answer is Eino Hanami. This sugya is all according to the one who says that Shor Mu'ad is established by the change in the animal because what it's done, not the interaction with the Ba'alim. The other answer is, even with the interaction of the Ba'alim, each time that the animal gores, you wore the Ba'alim afterwards. So after first time, second time, third time. When you warn them after the third time, the status of the animal has changed already because you have warned him. Now the next activity, the next goring, is something that you've now warned three times and now it will be liable for it. But the fact is that the status does change after that third warning. And therefore then the cases could be read either way, Yudei Torah or Yudei Gavra, and this wouldn't be evidence to that, to either side.
If you don't do this objection in front of the party that is taking possession of the property, then it should not be classified as a mecha, as an objection. Similar to the case of Shor Mu'ad, if you're going to create this equation between the two, then by Shor Mu'ad there is a requirement, Ma Shor Mu'ad Bifanav Bi'inan. Just like by Shor Mu'ad we require that the owner of the shor be warned about the behavior of his shor, you have to take him to Beit Din, and the Eidim have to testify in front of him. Av Hocha Nami Bifanav Bi'inan. So too over here, we require that you're going to object to this person taking possession of the property in front of him, not simply by speaking to Eidim, but speaking to him in person. And the way Rashi joins the two together, because as the Balei Tosafot point out, that this is a very difficult comparison that the Gemara is making at this point, because of the fact that they're working in opposite directions. Over by the case of the Mu'ad, the warning He's trying to warn the individual in the creation of the status of Muad, and that is going towards the creation of the Chazakah. Over here, the Macha'a, the objection is what's undermining or undoing the Chazakah that exists. And therefore, it's really not a case that is equivalent, or really the comparison seems very weak. And therefore, Rashi explains it in the following matter. Similar to the way that by a Shor Muad, that you have to warn the individual to take care of his Shor in the future, and that's why you need to do it in front of him, also over here. Af Hamcha'a Hatra'ahi, he's a hair similar way, the warning of the individual who is in possession of the land right now, that is to tell him or to warn him to keep his document of proof or document of sale intact because he might need to use it given the fact that this person is raising questions as to the authenticity of his ownership over here. So given that, Rashi sees the equation in the following manner, which is that in both cases we're warning the individual to take action. In the case of the Shor Muad, we're warning him to take action to watch the shore. And over here, we're telling the individual to take action to make sure that he keeps his ra'ayot, his evidence of the fact that he purchased this field intact because his chazakah won't stand in this case because we have someone objecting to it. And seemingly, both of those need to be done in front of him. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot offer a different interpretation, saying that really the Gemara could have asked from chazakah as well, that the establishment of the chazakah should be able to be done in front of the individual as well. But he says over here, the Gemara is asking a fair question. So then why did the Gemara ask it in the negative form rather than in the positive form, that it's the mechanism for establishing the chazakah, rather than the way the Gemara asks it about the way to undo the chazakah? He says is because mishum the chazakah nishmat fei mehada'a, because a chazakah has more of a call to it. It is something that is more prevalent and well known to other people. That's not true of hada'a, the warning given with regards to a shor. Ava mecha'a, the objection to someone taking possession of land, and nishmat yoter is on the same plane. And therefore, the Gemara used the mecha'a versus the hada'a, even though those aren't similar in nature. And the truth is that the Gemara is really just saying, why don't you need to establish a chazaka in front of the other individual the same way that you have to warn the owner of a shor in front of him? But it uses the language of mecha'a because mecha'a and hada'a aren't equal plane or on a level playing field in the terms of their publicity or other people's knowledge of the fact that those have taken place. Where it says, Hatam Muad Biba'alav Kediv. Over there by Shor Muad, the Pasuk says that you have to warn the owner of the shore in particular. Acha, in our instance, Chavroch Chavri Lei, your friend has a friend. Chavro de Chavroch, and your friend's friend, Chavri Lei, has friends as well, meaning that there is a rumor mill. As soon as this information is disseminated to people, then that information then will be passed along from person to person, and eventually will end up with the individual who needs to hear it. The way that Rashi learns it over here, he says, the Hatam came into Hadda'ad Chayvo Mamon, since over there by the shore, the purpose of the warning is to obligate him to make compensation for the damage that is done. Therefore, you have to bring him to court and have the Edim come in front of the Balim. So number one, they know the information, know that they're going to be obligated. And number two is that they can testify to the contrary. They can bring evidence to the contrary, and he needs all of that information. In our case, that is not true, because the purpose of the objection over here is simply to indicate to the individual that this chazakah is not going to be the mechanism or the vehicle by which he can bring proof to the fact that he owns this field. Rather, he's going to have to show his shtar. And there, you don't need to be done in front of him, because as soon as the information gets to him, all he has to do now is keep a hand, hang on to the shtar mechira, the bill of sale, which then shows evidence of the fact that he owns it. Chazakah was just a mechanism or a way to free him of having to keep the shtar, but now that's not possible anymore. He'll simply have to keep the shtar, but it doesn't undermine his ownership here because he can show the bill of sale, and that will reestablish his ownership here. Or as you can see here in the Balei Tosafot, and even more clearly in the Rabbeinu Gershom, Omishani Gabi Shor Muad, Shani Mishum Gzerata Katuvu, that by a Shor Muad, it's considered or classified as a Gzerata Katuv, the necessity to have the individual present when the Hadda is done, is from the psukim. And therefore, there's a demand that we won't necessarily apply to the case of Chazkat HaBatim, because over there, we have other ways for the information to reach the individual, and that will suffice because there is no Gzerat HaKatuv over here. The Gemara says, Udu Rabbi Meir, Damari Chek Nigigutav, Chayav, Kirev Nichutav, Do Koshikain. So this is a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara and Baba Kama with regards to the establishing of an animal to be a mu'ad. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda requires that the adot, in fact, that the animal gores has to be done on three separate days. Rabbi Meir says it's a kal v'chomer. If on three separate days he's classified as muad, and even if it happens on one day, as long as there are three different incidents that took place, that should suffice to generate a status of shor muad. So if that's the case, if we are keeping this equation, which says that shor muad is the source for chazakah, and obviously until now we've been using Rabbi Yehuda's shita, if you now then bring in Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir's shita, you should have the possibility damar that achlat tlata pere b'chad yoma. If you have the possibility of eating three different fruits on a single day, kigon te'ena, like a fig. Have a chazaka, dumya de shor mu'ad. It should be able to establish a chazaka just like a shor mu'ad. Now, according to the gusa that we have in front of us, and the way that Rashi explains it is that the te'enim are ripening, not on a fixed basis, but they ripen at different times during the day. And therefore, there's a possibility that you could, over a period of time, eat these te'enim and pick them separately from the tree because they ripen at different points in time. So therefore, you could have a possibility of basically creating three different incidents of establishing chazakah, similar to the way it works with negichot, with the goring, by simply eating three different figs from this tree because they have ripened at different times. And as the figs ripen over the day, you'll have some that ripen in the morning, some in the afternoon, and then some in the evening. And then he'll eat from those three different fruits, and it'll be classified as if he ate from three different points in time or three different harvests from this fig tree. Mer says, Mashor mu'ad b'idnadit le'hanigicha le'to le'hanigicha. The moment that this incident takes place in terms of the goring, the other incident doesn't exist yet. Hachanami, so it's over here, b'idnadit le'hanigicha le'to le'hanigicha. It has to be the case that when you pick this fruit, that the other fruit does not exist, does not extant yet. That's not true by the fig tree. Even though the fig itself may not be completely ripened, it's still on the tree and will ripen in the future. And therefore, when you pick this fig, the other fig already exists. And that will cause a problem because then they have, in a sense, overlapping incidents. And that won't establish a separate harvest for each of the figs, unlike the case of negichot, which each goring is considered to be a completely separate incident. Mar says, okay, achla tate peire, so then, the Gemara here offers another alternative. Is if you look at the caper bush, it has very, very small fruits. When you're talking about a fig is a much larger fruit, and therefore it develops over time, but it doesn't immediately or pop out all of a sudden. And therefore, when you're picking one, the other one is already on the tree. On the other hand, with the caper bush, where the fruits are very small, and they grow in a very short amount of time, there's a possibility that you could pick a caper fruit today, and then the next day you could pick another one that didn't exist on the time that you picked the first one. And then on the third day, the same thing. And now you can create a situation in which each fruit was completely independent, not around when the other fruit was there. And now you should be able to establish a chazakah in that manner. As Rashi indicates to us that the fruits grow so quickly, they grow after 3 days. So therefore, you would be able to, over a very short period of time, create a chazakah by having a separate, quote-unquote, harvest for each of them. Where it says, Hatam peira miha ito migmar hu dekal gamar va'ozil. Again, it's not true there. Even though here the fruits are much smaller, nevertheless, since the fruits still exist in some form on the tree at the time that you're picking the first fruit, that's not considered to be a separate harvest. It's considered to be as if they're all one part of one large elongated harvest, and therefore won't be considered or classified as a separate incident. Now, Tosfot here brings an alternate girsa that the Rabbeinu Chananel had, which was that in the beginning, and you can see that in the parentheses that we have in our Gemara, as well, that originally had b'tzlata peiri b'chad yoma. He wanted to eat three fruits on a single day, and that should establish a chazakah. For instance, like the caper bush, which the Gemara in Brachot indicates to us has three different items on it that are edible, and ever you could eat each of those items, and that should establish three harvests to create a chazakah, because you're able to eat three different items from the bush. And then, he says afterwards, the Gemara, after rejecting that, it says each one exists at the same time that the other one exists. Then the Gemara moves on and says, Teina, because by Teina, Zachla Tlata Peire, Betlata Yome, and that's referring to a fig, and he has the order of the Gemara changed, and has the addition of those words, Betlata Yome. Tosfot in the end says he doesn't think that that's the right girsa based on the Gemara in Shabbat, that seems to indicate otherwise. Now the Gemara tries to introduce the possibility of establishing this type of chazakah from another type of harvest, which is achat tlate peri b'tlate nyome. If you ate three different harvests over a period of 30 days, kagon asaf sata b'havi chazakah, like hay or animal feed, which you can cut every 10 days, it grows every 10 days, that should be able to establish a chazakah, because every 10 days you can turn it over, create the feed, and have a harvest. It says, hey chidomi, dekadiach v'achla, dekadiach v'achla. The case is a case where he keeps chopping it back, feeding it to the animals, and letting it grow. It says, shamitu de kashamit v'achil. That is, in a sense, a premature cutting of it. The truth is that it really grows over 30 days, and if you let it to its full maturity over the 30-day period, then that's considered to be one harvest. But when you chop it off in the middle of the 10 days, and then 10 days and 10 days, you're prematurely cutting it, and you don't consider that to be three different harvests, but rather a single harvest, but you're just pruning back or cutting back the item. The Gemara says, okay, achlotata peri b'tlata yarche. If you eat those three harvests over 3 months, kagona safsato, avi chazoko, then it would establish a chazoko, because now you have it growing fully to its full maturity over 30 days. You have three periods of 30 days that you're harvesting, that should establish a chazoko. The Gemara says, wait a minute, man ho cheusha. Who are those individuals who are part of the Sanhedrin that was found in Usha? Rabbi Yishmael. That is Rabbi Yishmael. It's a little bit difficult because Rabbi Yochanan says he heard from Kolchei Usha that this din is true. Rabbi Yishmael lives a number of generations before Rabbi Yochanan, where it would be difficult for Rabbi Yochanan to actually see Rabbi Yishmael. What you have to say is that Rabbi Yishmael is amongst those of the Kolchei Usha, and his Talmidim passed this down to Rabbi Yochanan. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel Hakanami, you're right. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you can't establish a chazaka in this way. That's not. Our Mishnah says at the end of the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Bemed Dvarim Amurim B'Stei Lavan. Our Mishnah is only relevant by a field of grains, a white field, of a B'Stei Ilan. When you're talking about a field or an orchard, three different harvests would count as a chazaka, the equivalent of 3 years. And so too here, according to the Hochei Usha, in the context of Rabbi Meir's opinion, it would be true that you'd be able to establish a chazaka by simply having three different harvests. Or in our case, harvesting of the feed or the hay every 30 days would establish that type of chazaka. According to the Rabbanon, who disagreed with Rabbi Shmuel that you do not have an ability to create a chazaka in this way, but rather you need to have a full 3 years in order to establish. We mentioned the Mishnah that according to some Rishonim, their opinion is actually in the Mishnah. That's the first opinion, and then you have Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva. Rather than the way Rashi learned that Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva were modifying or telling us what was meant by the previous statement. According to those Rishonim, this was the third opinion that we did not see in the Mishnah, but is implied by the Mishnah, which is 3 years is always the governing principle of how you establish a chazakah. So according to those Rabbanan, what's the source for their position? And Rabbi Yosef Krakti, it's the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, Sadot b'kesef yiknu, that one will purchase fields with money, v'katov b'sefer v'chatom, and you will document that in a contract and have it signed. Shaharei Navi Omeid, the Navi, Yirmiyahu is standing be'eser on the 10th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign, Mazhir al-Achatis reign, is telling them that the Churban Abayit is going to, the Churban Yerushalayim is going to take place in the 11th year, very shortly, and he's telling them or warning them that you will not have a possibility of using a chazaka as a mechanism for establishing evidence of your ownership, and therefore you better make sure that you have a shtar in place in order for that to work. Now that's the girsa that we have in front of us, and that's the girsa that our Seder Olam has. On the other hand, Balei Tosfot bring a girsa from Rabbeinu Chananel that it was Be'omeid B'Teisha, that he was sitting in the 9th year, and he's warning about the 10th and the 11th year. The way the Balei Tosfot have it reading is that, according to that Rabbeinu Chananel, there were sufficient time, there were 3 years in order to establish a chazaka, and that's what he was saying to them, have your contracts done now, because then you will have 3 years to complete them. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom brings that same Gersa from the Rabbeinu Chananel, but learns the opposite way around and says the same thing, that you're still short the 3 years, which is basically the fundamental problem that we're going to have with the Rabbanan Shita based on these Psukim and Yirmiyahu, which is that we never have 3 years and we don't know how to establish 3 years. Whether the Gersa of Rashi, which says he's in the 10th, and he's telling them it won't work because the 11th, or if he's standing in the 9th, there's still not a complete 3 years that are there. And therefore, all he is establishing is that you do need your contract because you want to establish a chazaka, but we still don't know the amount of time or the duration that takes place. So most Rishonim say that this still relies or leans on the idea of Shor Moad, that 3 is the number. What we're establishing here is the necessity for years. And so once you've done that, the multiple of 3 then is multiplied by years, and you will always need 3 years. Who says that over there he's giving them directive towards a halachic outcome? He's maybe giving them good advice. Because if you don't say that he was giving them good advice, the pasuk that says you should build houses and establish residence, ganot, and plant gardens, v'ichlu et piryan, and enjoy their fruits, what is he saying? What halachic ramification does that have? He's telling them good advice. You're going to be there for a duration of 70 years. You better establish yourselves and get comfortable there because you're not going to be leaving so soon. So to Hachanami, it's a tova kamash malan. Also over here, he's giving them good advice that they should put away these contracts and store them. The Rishonim here have different views as to what exactly was the good advice that he was giving them. Rashi says that it was just good advice that he wanted to keep the shtar around in case people have questions about the ownership over here. And he says, keep your shtar around. It's just general good advice. Whereas the Rabbeinu Yonah suggests that the good advice here is that they should purchase properties here because they will return after 70 years, and that's why it was good advice. Ramban suggests that the good advice over here is that they should store the shtarot in a manner that will allow them to last for a long period of time. And he was advising them how to do that, to put them into a kli cheres and bury them, and that will maintain or preserve these contracts for the long term. Others still suggest that the problem is that there's not going to be anybody around to give evidence of the fact that there's a chazakah because of the turmoil that will happen through the Churban, and therefore they're better off holding onto the shtarot so they won't run into problems in terms of bringing evidence to the fact that they own this property. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Chavtet, Amud Aleph.